everyone. Welcome to episode 4 of the Terminally Nerdy Podcast. I'm your host, Clay, if you were unaware. I don't really know how many people know my actual name. The ones who listen to this. I don't know. Anywho, it is Tuesday the 24th. Yes, 24th of September. A week since my last podcast to the day, hour. I want to welcome you, as always, to my journey home, and someone's going from a turn lane to the not turn lane in the middle of an intersection because that's fucking smart. Don't do that. That's dangerous. Oy. People drive crazy here in Florida. Let me tell you something. They are insane. Anyway, I've got a couple of topics to go over. I'm still managing to get enough topics to go weekly so far. Just bear in mind, that may not happen. There may be times when I skip weeks if I just don't have enough I want to talk about. So, now I want to preface this. So when I recorded the last one, I was pretty much dead set as I'm not going to play Borderlands, or if I do, I'm not going to cover it, and I'm not going to use the EGS, the Epic Game Store. And I kind of talked about that on, I want to say, Tuesday night and Wednesday morning, about how, because of people around me, really, I'm getting hit with the FOMO, fear of missing out. A lot of my friends and a lot of the social circles that I hang out with are really into Borderlands 3 right now. So I was basically surrounded by it. And I knew, having played the game at Guardian Con in July, that the game was good. I just didn't want to support Epic. Because I don't like them. I don't like their attitude. But really looking at it, basically on Wednesday, got into some conversations with people, and going into Thursday, when I was sick with one of my stomach issues, I have stomach problems, it's a chronic thing, don't worry about it, I deal, I realized that I was letting the internet's perception of the Epic Game Store color my, and that is a loud motorcycle. Hopefully that didn't overwhelm me, color my perception of it without having experienced it myself. And if I'm going to be a games journalist, when in reality I consider myself more of a gamer who writes, but, you know, that's splitting hairs, I was going to have to try the Epic Game Store, but I didn't want to use it to purchase any games from the devs who have basically broken promises in my eyes, or have been assholes. Ooblets, I'm looking at you. You're assholes. You shouldn't have done what you did when you announced the Epic Game Store thing. That was some bullshit, so keep that in mind. So, I decided, one, I was going to install the Epic Game Store, and two, I was going to buy the base copy of Borderlands 3 for myself. And if I did any sort of coverage for it to justify it, as suggested by my patron Irene, maybe I should talk about it on the podcast. So, as far as what I've been up to this past week, it was Borderlands 3. I basically bought it while I was sick, installed it while I was sick, played it in between running to the bathroom, essentially. It was like 30 minutes of bathroom, 30 minutes of Borderlands. Off and on. Pretty much all Thursday. And then I played and streamed it Saturday, and played and streamed it Sunday. So the 6 hours of streaming Borderlands 3, total between the 2 days, plus this, is basically all the coverage I'm giving it. I'm almost done with the story mode, so, yeah. And we'll talk about that. So there's some other stuff I've gotten into, and I'll talk about specifically the Borderlands 3 stuff in a moment. So other things I've been up to. On Thursday, I also sat down, once I was feeling better in the evening, and recorded footage for Time Spinners, Daemon Ex Machina, and Greedfall. So all three of those indie impression videos already have their footage done. I just need to do the audio and put them together. I also purchased on Friday to cover as an indie impression video the Untitled Goose Game. Now, I talked about the other three already, so I'm going to spend a little bit of time talking about Untitled Goose Game. It is exactly what it sounds like. You're a goose. You're in a small town, and you do asshole goose things. Because, if you are unaware, geese are kind of dicks. However, what the promo for the game doesn't really explain is that the gameplay is actually a stealth puzzle game. So, you will be given a list of objectives and a level, and you are tasked to complete those any way you kind of can. So, an example of one in the first level is force the farmer to wear his sun hat. But the game doesn't give you any direction beyond that. Now, obviously, my wife was helping me, because I'm not very good at puzzle games, generally. We figured out how to get him to put on his sun hat. But I will admit, because I'm not very good at puzzle games, when I got to the second area, I got really frustrated really fast with one of the objectives, which was break the broom. My wife and I assumed that to break it, we would have to, like, wedge it into the geometry and, like, pull on it. You know, basically, put the broom somewhere where you couldn't really move it and then push on it. That is not how the developers wanted you to break it, and there's only one actual solution to breaking it. And it took me 20 minutes, and finally I looked it up online to solve it. And now I'm in Area 3, and I'm running into the same problems, where I've got an objective to force someone else to break a vase, which I don't understand yet how to pull off. Or, the other objective that I'm stuck on is make a dude walk around barefoot, because I can get one of his shoes off, but I can't get the other one off, so I'm kind of frustrated with Untitled Goose Game. Mind you, it's a fantastically fun little game with a lot of charm to it, and if you want to be an asshole waterfowl, that's the way to go, but I don't like puzzlers. So there's like a little mini indie impressions. I'm going to put that together with an actual video with better audio using my fancy mic, but that's basically how I feel about it. I still have to play Devious Dungeons, which will be a special edition for the Terminally Nerdy Indie Impression stuff, because that was actually a key given to me through Keymailer. And the other game I got that we don't talk about, that one's not happening. It's just not. The game is not getting improved, so I'll check back in like 6 months and see if it's gotten any better. Beyond those, and Borderlands, I wrote something yesterday, that I posted today, Tuesday. So those of you who are hearing this Friday who are not patrons, go back to my website, go to terminallynerdy.com, and look up. The post is titled, The Hidden Cost Behind Content Creation. And I wrote this because I see this a lot. I see it from fellow fans of other creators asking things like, when are you going to do this? Why aren't you making more videos? Why aren't you making more podcasts? Come on, the video is only 10 minutes long. You can put out more of those. Why aren't you putting out more Let's Plays? Why aren't you producing more stuff? Well, here, on this podcast, I'm going to tell you right now, because I now technically do podcasts, writing, YouTubing, and streaming. And every single one of them has a hidden cost, and that cost is time and energy and, you know, behind-the-scenes production work. There is a lot to go. So, using my Indie Impression video as an example, those videos average about 10 minutes long, and I put them out every 2 weeks, publicly. Those things, when I actually sat down to figure out how long they take me, start to finish, both, we're talking playing the game to do it, and then all the work to make the video, they take me, at minimum, about 4.5 hours. Because I'm playing the game for at least 2 hours, minimum. I mean, like, if you look at Dead Cells I played for about 8 before I finally was like, alright, I'm good, I'm going to make the video. So I played Dead Cells for 8. And when you're playing a game to do an impression or to do a review, you're playing it both for pleasure, hopefully, but you're also looking at it with a kind of critical eye to kind of say, okay, how does this work? Why does this work? Do I like this? Do I not like this? You kind of build it up in your head. Some people write notes down. If you ever watch the making of an AVGN video that James Rolfe has on his Cinemassacre YouTube, that dude writes notes and, like, time codes. His process is crazy for his stuff. But my little 10-minute videos that I can just bang out still take 4.5 hours minimum a piece, because the other 2.5 hours is rendering time, uploading time, putting together the images and the end cards and the music, and putting it all together, and, you know, creating thumbnails and promoting it and setting up all the posts everywhere. That all takes time. And people don't understand that that takes time. Like this podcast, I record it in my car because this is what I like to refer to as lost time. My commute is incredibly long and annoying, and this is a way for me to maximize my wasted time every day. Because, I mean, I'm doing this 5 days a week, twice a day. I'm driving an hour to an hour and a half, depending on traffic, to either get to work or go home. So I have this 2 to 2.5 hours, sometimes even 3 hour block of time every day where I just don't have anything to do because I'm in a car. So that's where this podcast came from. But I didn't realize that recording the podcast, sure, that's like, what, 30 to 45 minutes, depending on what I'm doing. Then I get home, and I got to spend about 15 to 20 minutes, sometimes a little longer, making the audio as best as I can, because, again, I'm recording in a car on a lapel mic. Then I have to upload it, I have to tag it, I have to write show notes, I have to do a bunch of stuff to get this thing ready to put out in the world for everyone to consume. So for this podcast, for me, it takes you 30 to 45 minutes to listen to it, but it takes me like an hour and a half to put it together. And I mean, I'm simplistic. On my blog post, I went to one of my friends. I've known him for years, and he is one... I've known him and his wife. They are the team behind a bunch of podcasts, one of which is called The White Vault. And if you're into narrative horror podcasts, you might be aware of it. I'm friends with the people behind The White Vault. The White Vault episodes are like 20-ish minutes long, but because of the production quality behind it, it takes him like 60 hours to put together one episode. Because he's having to get voice actors, you know, he's got to write a script, him and his wife, they combine, they have to write a script, get the script out to their voice actors. Their voice actors do however many takes their voice actors are going to do. They get the takes back, they pick the best takes, they splice everything together in the narrative, you know, string. They add sound effects. They do something called Foley, which I don't understand what that is exactly. Post-production. Then they do their own promotion and self-work because they're doing it all on their own. They don't have a team. It's just the two of them. You know, and talk out like I posted and I tagged LGR, Lazy Game Reviews, and he even responded with, you know, when he starts his week sometimes working on a video, he's already spent 30, 40 hours working on something. It's like fucking Tuesday because he's doing research. He's doing restoration work. He's filming different shots. He's writing scripts. And I mean, he's producing, you know, like one video every week or one video every 2 weeks of like just stuff about retro gaming, like PCs and things. There's a lot of fucking work in this. You know, I mean, even my streams, you've got 3 hours of me being on camera, interacting with people, and, you know, doing things while trying to play a game, so I'm having to multitask. But even before that, I'm having to make sure everything is set up correctly, make sure my internet's working, make sure all my graphics are set properly, make sure I'm tagging everything. There's just this list of stuff that happens behind the scenes that you don't see, and I go over all of it. Probably the one that surprised me the most, though, was my writing, because I save my written stuff primarily for reviews. Big, full-featured reviews. And when I actually thought about it, for a video game review, the writing takes me about 1 to 2 hours to write it out, edit it, and put it together. But then I have to factor in the fact that I just spent 40-plus, sometimes longer, hours playing the game and paying attention to it so I know what kind of stuff I want to talk about. Like, Grim Dawn took me probably about 45 hours to put together. Fucking Path of Exile was 300 and change at the time, because I wasn't comfortable doing it until I played it a whole lot. Xenoblade Chronicles probably hit upwards of about 80 total when you count my 75 hours of playtime. And I'm intending to write reviews, spoiler alert, this is my plans, I'm going to do a full written review of Torna the Golden Country, which is the prequel DLC to Xenoblade 2, and The Outer Worlds, the Obsidian game coming out in October. So those are two fairly meaty games. I already know that Torna's probably going to run me about 25 to 30 hours, possibly longer, depending on how much I put into it to play through. And The Outer Worlds is already, Obsidian's come out and said it's going to be like a 25 to 30 hour game, kind of like Mass Effect. So I already know I've got a ton of time in those two games coming up. And I'm doing that on top of maintaining the 4.5-plus-hour indie impression videos. I do a lot. And, you know, I'm not the only creator that does stuff like this. They all do. And any creator who actually puts time and effort into what they're doing, even a modicum of it, is doing this kind of crazy-ass shit. And people just don't get it, I suppose. Because if you're not doing it, if you've not sat down to make a piece of art, write out a story, blog something, make a review, if you've not actually done it, you don't really know what kind of insane stuff goes on in the background. So, yeah. Now, enough about that. Let's talk Borderlands 3. So, it's good. It's more Borderlands, and it's improved Borderlands. Did you like the gameplay of Borderlands 2? Then you will love 3, because it's all of that but better, with a bunch of quality of life improvements that are really, really nice. Like, in Borderlands 2, anyone who's played it knows that in order to loot ammo or money, you actually had to point, hold down the loot key, which on the keyboard was E, and you would vacuum it all in after a couple seconds. Well, that's gone. You just loot it. If there's ammo or money and you get near it, you vacuum it in, assuming you can use it. It's great. You can open boxes and just walk past them, and you'll vacuum in anything you need. It's fantastic. Skill trees are more varied because every character has 3 choosable action skills. Except for Maz, but Maz has 1 action skill with multiple weapon choices because she has a mech. I'm playing as Flak, and my action skill options were a vortex teleport, where I would teleport my pet, a permanent pet, mind you, to the enemies while also dealing damage when the teleport goes off. I can summon racks, which is what I'm using right now. I literally shoot, like, 4 racks out, and then they just track enemies and kill them and hit them. Or I can get a cloak. Like, and every character has these 3 choices, plus their full trees. There's more endgame options. There's, the world is huge. It's massive. But the only complaint I have is that the story for a lot of people is a little weak. I like it. I like the Calypsos. I like what they're satirizing, which is the influencer thing, you know. Like, share, and subscribe. They are like, follow, and obey. That's their tagline. Visually, it's great. It looks fantastic. I have not run into much in the way of bugs personally. Right now at release, there are some issues people have been having. A big one that people have been having, which I have not had, thank God, because I turned off cloud saving, is that their cloud saves get desynced improperly and they lose progress. And there was also an issue for a while where you were getting inflated XP at 50. They have what they call a guardian rank system, which is very similar to Diablo 3's masteries, where you just gain XP at level max level and you can kind of like level up generic health, generic damage kind of stuff. Only their guardian trees are much more in-depth for this. There was an issue where you were getting inflated XP, and all of a sudden people are in debt to guardian levels. I have not beaten it, so I have not hit the guardian stuff. You don't get to guardian stuff until you beat the story mode. I'm near it. I want to say I'm on like chapter 17 or 18 out of 23. But yeah, I'm enjoying it. I'm definitely looking forward to the DLCs in the future. I'll probably pick up the season pass in a couple months once I actually finish it. But if you liked Borderlands 2, this is just better. In pretty much every way, except the story, and that's up for debate depending on who you are. I actually like how the Calypsos make things a bit more personal than Handsome Jack did. Handsome Jack just doesn't give a shit. He's rich as shit. Doesn't really show up much until, like, halfway through. And you really don't face him too often. You don't really get to see him physically in front of you. He's usually just taunting you. Where the Calypsos, on multiple occasions, get in your face. They physically show up and cause problems for you, which makes it feel a bit more personal, I guess, for me. Also, the cameos are hilarious. Like, seriously, the cameos are great. So, alright, now I've got 2 other topics to go over today. One is my own, and it's something I wanted to talk about, because I didn't get to talk about it last time. That is difficulty in games. So, last week, a game developer by the name of Mark Kern popped up and did a kind of a hot take on Twitter because somebody had written out that Death Stranding is getting a very easy mode and all games should get a very easy mode. And he took it seemingly to say that, and I don't think this was his intention, I don't think his intention was to say that games should just be very easy. But he seemed to take it, and a lot of people backed him up, that adding an easy mode to games waters the game down. It removes the developer's vision. And at one point, him and a buddy of his that's a patron of mine, hi Nizul, I'm going to mention you. I'm not mad at you, but I need to mention it. They point out World of Warcraft Classic, and how people are much more attached to it because of its inherent difficulty. So, first of all, adding a difficulty option does not change the developer's vision. The developer's vision is almost always going to be whatever they consider the baseline normal difficulty. In a game like Borderlands 3, normal, until you unlock higher difficulties, is their baseline experience and expectation. Giving me the option to drop the difficulty down doesn't change anything for anyone else. So if you got Dark Souls, and Dark Souls suddenly got difficulty, and its normal was exactly as it is now, and then if you dropped it to easy, it just made the game easier, we are still not removing anything. We have taken nothing away. Okay? That's the thing here. Adding an accessibility option does not take it away. It doesn't change the fact that, like, someone like CoCarnage, who plays every game he gets his hands on the absolute hardest difficulty he can, it doesn't change his ability to do that. Because adding easy, or story, or very easy, is not the same as taking away the difficulty for everyone else. Now, MMOs are different. WoW Classic is a different story entirely. In WoW Classic, you're playing on a persistent multiplayer world. The difficulty was actually designed specifically to keep you playing. Because remember, like, if I buy a copy of Borderlands 3, that's it. Gearbox has my money. They should not have any control over my experience at this point. If I want to play easy, which I do, because I just want to be a superhero, go home, and kill shit, then that's my prerogative. Okay? But if you're playing in any sort of persistent multiplayer game, so like Anthem, difficulty is inherent based on the server structure because you're now applying it to everybody. And for MMOs specifically, especially stuff like World of Warcraft, they have to balance that difficulty with the keeping you playing because that's how they make their money. People who pay to play WoW, they're paying $15 a month. Whether they're playing WoW Classic or they're playing Battle for Azeroth, they need something to keep them playing, and that is the inherent difficulty in Classic, the feeling that you've earned something with your time and your investment that gives you a sense of, and I hate to use it, pride and accomplishment. I remember playing Classic. I felt really good when I got Solthraz, which was an epic sword that you had to get two other drops for in Zul'Farak to get it. I did it. It took me and a group of my friends something like fucking 9 hours and just endless, repeated ZF runs to get both swords for me. But they were wanting to do it because it was, quite frankly, with the way I was building my character, the best weapon I could get. Because I was doing this weird two-handed fury warrior thing where, never mind, it's complicated. But, yeah, I felt really good for getting it. In fact, I kept Solthraz forever. When I got my High Warlord's Pig sticker on that same warrior, because I earned all the honor from just grinding the shit out of Ulterac Valley, that shit's still in my bank on that character. I never play that character. That character's sitting at, like, level 75. But I have the High Warlord's Pick sticker, and I have the title I earned. But it wasn't the difficulty, it wasn't anything other than grinding that did anything. So you can't really use an MMO to justify difficulty in game design and a very easy mode, because they're inherently differently designed. If you're going to talk about difficulty modes, especially when it regards to like something like Death Stranding, you have to talk about other single-player or cooperative experiences that are not always online, because that's the only time you're going to have a difficulty selector, unless you're playing a dungeon crawler MMO, like, say, Soulworker or something. Because those have difficulty selection, specifically because you can, like, form a party and be like, oh, we're going to do this level on hard. But you're, like, level selecting and stuff, and it's a very different thing. And I find it surprising that seasoned game developers would try to compare a single-player experience to an MMO. I do. Azul, that was silly. That was silly. Niz, come on, man. You made Firefall. You helped make Firefall. Come on. You should know better. And again, no one who wants the easy modes are saying take away the difficult modes and set normal to whatever the baseline experience is. So if we have a game like Dark Souls, which is understandably incredibly difficult, and you make that normal, and then you give it a step higher and a step lower, you have not changed the inherent game design of that game. Because normal, what everyone will look at and say, oh, that's the normal mode, most people are going to play on that unless they just want to experience the story. Not every one of us is looking for a hard-as-nails, punch-in-the-face game. Some of us, like myself, we play games either for coverage, like I'm doing now, or we play games to relax. Like, I was playing Borderlands on normal until I hit a boss that was bugged for me and was hitting me through cover and two-shotting me repeatedly. And I just got frustrated after an hour of banging my head against that fruitcake of a boss. It was the Katagawa Ball. For those of you who've played it, it's the Katagawa Ball. I'd get behind cover, and he'd hit me through the fucking cover and two-shot me over and over. Maddening. So I said, you know what? I'm just going to play it on easy. Fuck it. And I'm having a great time. Badasses with launchers still kill me because no badass should ever have a rocket launcher, but I'm having a much better time with the game playing it my way. And me playing it on easy doesn't change the fact there's anybody out there who's playing it on normal. Anybody out there playing on Mayhem fucking 3 in true Vault Hunter mode with the difficulty max to hell and back. I take nothing away from those people. But if I was playing Anthem, I would just have to learn Anthem's difficulty and deal with it, because that is inherently multiplayer and a live game, and everyone's playing together. See the difference? There is an inherent difference in single player and multiplayer and difficulty, and you can't compare the two. There you go. Alright, there's my rant about difficulty in gaming, because every time it comes up, it pisses me off. Now, we're going to talk about a question that my coworker Lawrence asked me at work. And he wanted to know how I felt about the state of retro game collecting in regards to, like, the pricing and everything. So, normally I would defer such a question to the CU podcast and Pat the NES Punk and Ian Ferguson, as they are both experts at retro game collecting. I haven't actually collected retro games, or attempted to, in, God, 3-4 years now. And I got out of it because of the pricing. And I didn't even want to try to collect an entire library of any particular game or system. I specifically wanted specific games for specific systems. But the problems I ran into here in Orlando, Florida, was that there were so many mom-and-pop retro shops popping up that I couldn't get games. I couldn't find them at thrift stores. I couldn't find them at flea markets. I couldn't find them anywhere but these retro stores, because these retro stores would come in and just buy everything. Didn't matter what it was, they would just swoop in, buy everything, and then they'd go to eBay and immediately price it based on what eBay or price charting was saying. So you were looking at Legend of Zelda 1, like the original cartridge, for like $30, $40, which is obscene. Or like Super Mario 3 or Contra or any of these like classic games would be really inflated. And what I've always found out about it is that really what you're buying is nostalgia. Not to dig on, say, Pat, because Pat collected pretty much the entire NES collection, if you were unaware who he is. He collected it because of nostalgia, because he got the bug to collect. Personally, I just want to play the damn things. And at this point, with the prices the way they are, I am perfectly fine either A, three releases of them. Like, when Grandia HD Remake got released on the released, it's on the Switch, I bought it. It's on my Switch. Both Grandia 1 and 2. $40. You know what? I don't care. I now have it. Permanently. Sitting right there. I don't have to go out and try to find a disc copy of Grandia to play on a PS1 or 2. But if I can't buy a re-release, like, say, Legend of Mana or Chrono Cross, I'll emulate it. I don't care. Because at this point, I'm looking at it like this. If the game companies aren't willing to re-release the game, and I can't find it because it's no longer in production, then yeah, fuck it, I'll emulate the damn thing. If I don't have a way to play it, I will emulate it. Stuff like Legend of Mana and Chrono Cross and stuff, I actually bought when I had a PS3. So as far as I'm concerned, Sony's gotten my money for those. If I want to emulate them, I will. But like the NES, unless I buy the NES Classic, which only has 30 games on it, I can't play most of the NES library without emulation. I can't play most of the SNES library without emulation, and I own an SNES Classic, and I now pay for Switch Online, so I'm getting NES and Super Nintendo games. I honestly don't think, unless you're specifically trying to collect a small collection of games for a specific console, that it's worth the money getting into this collector's market. Especially when right now, according to Pat Neen again, they've been reporting on this, now you're starting to get graded games, like you'd get graded comic books, which makes zero sense to me, because what are you grading? The fucking plastic? The game is digital. It's code. It's not like Superman, it's not like, you know, Detective Comics number one or whatever the fuck, you know, Superman Action Comics. It's not like those where you literally have to have the damn thing to see it. Oh no! Stadium events graded! I guess I'll just go online and download a ROM of stadium events. Like, the fuck? Like, I honestly do not get it. Like, the box copies, like, okay, cool, you put the box on the shelf. I'll just go over here and download the game and play it anyway, because that's all I fucking want to do. I don't care. Like, I don't get it. And that may be it. That may be the thing, is that I don't understand it because it's not my kind of thing. When I was trying to collect, all I wanted were two things. A Sega Master System with, a like, 10 games that were very specific, and a PS1 with pretty much every PS1 RPG, because I love PS1 RPGs. And that was it. That's all I wanted. I got lucky once and got a copy of Dragon Quest VII for $5 at a Goodwill. That, by the way, at the time when I got it, was an $80 game. God only knows what it is now. And the dude came by behind me while I was looking at it, kind of in awe of the fact that I found this. He immediately grabbed every other PS1 game that was on that shelf, looked at me, sneered at me, said, I should have gotten that, and walked off. Like, I took it from him. So, I mean, I don't even want to deal with other collectors anymore, because it just it irritates me. I am a huge fan of retro games. I grew up on them. I love them. Mega Man series is one of my favorites, even if I can't play it worth shit now. But, like, the whole collecting aspect of it, I want no part of it. I don't need it anymore. Digital is way easier to handle. I can have every fucking NES game known to man downloaded on my computer. It'll take, like, what, maybe a gig of space? Woo-doo! And I can play them anytime I want with USB controllers. Why do I care? I think it is out of hand. That is what I think. Completely out of hand. Alright, well, that was all I had for today. It was some ranty stuff today. Good show, Clay. Lots of ranting. Not a lot of traffic problems. Traffic's been pretty nice. The weather's nice, finally. It's cooling off. It's time for Florida to do what it always does during the fall and winter, what we have of those here, and that is randomly change its temperature. For those of you who've never been down here in December, January, we will have shifts from like 30 degrees in the morning to like 80, 90 at night. In one day, we'll have a 60-degree shift. It's obscene. We get sick a lot this time of year, so that's a thing. But I'm going to be hitting a Walmart. Got to do a little bit of shopping for me and the wife. So, as always, if you like what I'm doing, please follow me on Twitter, terminally, @terminallynerdy. please visit my website, terminallynerdy.com, where you can get this podcast and everything else that I do when I do them. Please feel free to follow me on Twitch, twitch.tv/terminallynerdy. Follow me on YouTube, youtube.com/terminallynerdy. Support me in all those places and visit me on Patreon, patreon.com/terminallynerdy, to get this podcast early, to get input on the games that I stream, and sometimes even input on the games that I'm going to review, or how I prioritize them. And pretty much everything else I do immediately, rather than having to wait, think of it like a tip jar. It's a monthly tip jar. You throw me some extra cash, you get some cool stuff, you get everything early, you get some input, stuff like that. You know, $2 a month minimum. Come on, do it. Give me the cash. Give me the cash! And if you get that reference, then you're super green. Alright, but that'll be it. So as always, everyone, treat everyone kind. Come on, we're in this together. This is the human condition. And stay nerdy. Thanks for listening.